Chasing Big Joe on this Wednesday. Let's start things off by hearing from Titans head coach Brian Callahan.
But those are how those things get made, and that's what we think about when we make them.
What are the short-term and long-term benefits of the trade?
I'm not going to go into too many details of those conversations, but I think how I answered it is how I'm going to stay with it. So.
Was he headed for maybe a lesser role if he had stayed around with the emergence of Armour Davis?
You know, I think whether it's a lesser role or not, I think the important part is we do have some players there that we feel good about that are starting to play good football for us and getting ingrained in the systems and starting to have a little bit more action. So those guys that we're looking forward to seeing more of too, you know, got a couple of Marcus Harris is in there, Jalen Armour Davis, Bakes played well for us. So Snead's playing really good football as well for us on top of it. So we got some guys there that we're excited about.
Do you anticipate that starting spot being taken immediately, or is it going to kind of be a rotational competition for a week or two?
That's the latter, probably more likely. Some competition and some rotation, depending on how the practice goes and how those guys perform. That's part of it. You know, obviously both Jalen and Bake played last week. That'll probably continue through this week, and we'll see where we get to by game time.
Did he ask to be traded at all?
What's that?
Did he make any kind of request to be traded? Did he want that?
None that I'm aware of. No, there's nothing that was brought up to my attention. So no, I don't think so.
What do you guys talk draft and develop? Mm-hmm. He's a young player, started and had some success for you. It's hard for people to kind of put together how your draft and develop operates with trading a young, cheap guy who's showing some talent. Can you help connect the dots there?
Yeah, again, I think it's one of those decisions that get talked about. The details of we'll keep between us, but it's still part of the short-term process and the long-term range goals that we have. And you know, those things are between Mike and I, and then what we see and feel, and we'll keep those things in-house.
What do you think you signal to the team with this trade?
Not a whole lot, other than we're trying to continue to perform those goals that we want here in the short term, which is to win games, and then the long term version of how that goes when you accumulate picks. That's all part of the process. That's not really their job to worry about. Their job is to get ready to go play Houston and play well. Those are just part of the business of the NFL.
Fans are automatically going to wonder when a team struggles, you know, even though it's only 3 weeks, mm-hmm. and a trade is made, maybe that signals the start of more. Should anything be taken along those lines?
No, I don't think so. I think that was a one-off situation, unique to what it was. And those conversations happen as they happen. There's front offices around the league from now until the deadline that call everybody in football, and they all are looking for different things. And so I can't say whether or not there'll be something more or nothing more. It's hard for me to make any predictions about that or stake any statements about it. But I think that's always what front offices around the league are doing, is trying to figure out if there's players to be had and if there's draft capital to be had, and that's constantly going on.
Coach, you mentioned shifting. Go ahead, Lauren.
Oh, sorry, Bill. How much is locker room fit and character part of those short and long-term decisions you mentioned?
Well, that's always a part of every decision we make when it comes to the acquisition of players, when it comes to adding people that we want to be a part of the locker room, that we think have the right makeup and mentality to continue to fit into what we're trying to accomplish. Those things are every player we talk about, whether it's a draft pick, a free agency signing, a trade, all those things are a part of the conversation.
And did Jarvis fit into that picture for you?
Yeah, it wasn't anything about Jarvis in particular. It was more that these are things that we look at from, again, trying to make sure we have the best team to be able to put forward, and then what we have moving forward in the long term. So those are all parts of the conversation.
You mentioned the change in the play calling.
It wasn't anything about Jarvis in particular, but you decided to trade a semi-productive fifth-round pick in his second year,
sure,
for a step up from the seventh round to the sixth. So if it wasn't about Jarvis in particular, what was it about?
Again, it's about the short-term and long-term goals. I've already elaborated on it. You're not going to get any more details about the conversation. It is what it is.
How is it not about the player?
No, it's always about all of it. All those things factor into the process, whether it's the player, whether it's the fit, whether it's what we think we can get for him, whether it's something that adds to the value of our draft capital. Those are all parts of the conversation, and those are decisions that we make as we talk about them.
You mentioned the shift in the play calling yesterday. Mm-hmm. I know it's only Wednesday early in the week, but have you noticed a difference when it comes to your preparation this week for the Texans after those changes you made?
Talking about for me personally?
Yes.
I've spent, you know, I've spent most of my time in special teams and in defensive meetings and making sure I got a good pulse of what's happening there, and having more conversations with players, understanding some of the things that they think and feel. That's all a part of the process for me. And I'm still involved in the offense and still around it and in the meetings and all that stuff when it comes to the game plan. And but those guys are doing a great job. We got a really good offensive staff, and I put a lot of trust in them anyway when I was calling it, and I have a lot of trust in them now with Bo calling it. So it's been good. I've actually enjoyed stepping back and looking at some other things that maybe I didn't have the time and energy to put into it because of other responsibilities. So it's been productive, I think.
To get an understanding of it, you said short-term and long-term goals for mm-hmm. Brownlee, but entering this year, he was your starting corner, like mm-hmm. one of your better corners. Did something change from camp until now to –
I think we've got some other players that are playing pretty good and guys that we're excited about and think that they can help us. So, again, those are all parts of what you weigh when you have that. Guys that can potentially gain you some value in the long term when it comes to draft capital. But we feel good about the guys that we have and how they performed.
Are you going to be on the field?
He's still working through that. That's a personal preference for the play caller. Some guys like to be on the field because they like to be able to have conversations and look guys in the eye and all that. Some guys like to be removed because it's when you're upstairs, it's quieter, it's calmer. You can sort of lay things out in front of you. I think he's done both. I think he started at one point in the booth when he was in Vegas and then came down. So it's up to him wherever he feels most comfortable. I don't have a strong preference for that. I'll be down there. Nick's been upstairs, and that conversation will continue. And then I think wherever he sees the best fit is where that'll be for him.
Attention Cam gets. How's that going to impact? We see him down there with Cam.
Yeah, that's part of it. You know, that's going to be part of the equation. It's going to be up to him, and I don't know what the final answer is at the moment. I think he's going to work through that, but you know, we got plenty of guys that can go have those conversations and talk through it. I mean, we're all on the headset, so there's nothing that's going to get missed if that's the case if he calls from upstairs. But yeah, I'm not going to speak for him. He'll figure that out, and we'll have a plan in place for that if he does.
Talk about playing with the desperate mindset. I know some players said that on Monday as well. How do you do that without maybe putting additional pressure on yourself as well, or players not putting extra pressure on themselves?
So the first part one more time?
You talked about playing with a desperate mindset maybe mm-hmm. on Sunday. I know some players mentioned that Monday as well. What does that look like, and how do you not put pressure on yourself by playing?
Yeah, that's always the line you got to toe is – there's a part of just making sure you're focused on doing the fundamentals right, doing the basics right, playing good, solid football. But there should be an urgency and an energy that goes into how badly you want to find a way to win a game. And that needs to come out in how we prepare, how we practice. Then hopefully on game day, there is no feeling of that. You just play fast and play free. But I think the urgency during the week is what really more what I'm referring to. When it comes to those things.
I know it's ultimately on him.
About potentially rotating some of the front seven, I guess, around to try to get more pass rush. Are there other options as well in order to try to, you know, get the pass rush numbers up?
Yeah, that's all a part of what we need to do better. We have to find a way to get the quarterback on the ground. There's some guys that got some inside flex. You know, Hottie's got some, Dre's got some. What is the best combination for who we're playing and what type of players we're playing against. There's pressure packages that figure into that as well. You know, when and where do you bring five and six? When do you fire zone? When do you zero? All those things are a part of it. So, yeah, there's things that we are looking at and how we can better improve our ability to get the quarterback on the ground.
I know it's ultimately up.
I just had a follow on that. Speaking of the edge guys, I know you guys wanted the bigger types in this year maybe to help on the run games with setting the edge. Are you seeing evidence that at least in the run game you're setting better edges?
Yeah, that part's been we've done a better job sort of condensing the C gap and keeping the perimeter runs in check. Our biggest issue in the run game right now is the missed tackles. That's where we've had our explosive runs come from. You know, guys get to the second level and we're not getting them down for the runs that we should be getting them down for. You know, the fourth and one against the Rams, for example, we got them dead in the backfield and ends up being a 40-yard run. Those are the things that we got to do a better job of is getting those guys on the ground. But I do feel like our edges have been – we've been stouter, stronger, more physical. It's been a little bit harder to get in those C-gaps and outside over the early part of the year. So just got to, again, keep doing that and then be able to get them on the ground.
It's ultimately on him to do it. But what can you guys do as a staff to try to help Calvin snap out of the funk he's been in?
I think there's – the work part of it, you know, just go back to work and focus on the things that, that help you execute the basics, you know. Again, catching a football is sort of the basic requirement of the job, and you have to work at that sometimes. And that's a mindset, that's a focus thing. The other part of it is, you know, I try to remind them every now and again. You just try to build their confidence back up. But, you know, it's Calvin Ridley. You know what I mean? Like, he's a first-round pick. He's been a great player in this league. He's won national championships. Sometimes guys need to be reminded that that's who they are. It build the confidence back up. It's like I said, it's like a slump for a hitter. And you got to find a way out of it. And sometimes it just takes the one catch or the one play to break that feeling, and you're kind of right back to where you are. So that's the sports psych part of it. You know, there's an element of that for all these guys. You know, when things aren't going their way, and we got to find a way to help them get out of it.
Where's the middle screen in kind of what you're looking at, and
like schematically?
Doesn't seem like you've looked at that at all in terms of what you're doing short game.
Yeah, we've had a couple of screens get called, not necessarily executed well enough. We've had one or two with Cam trying to find a lane with some of those screen plays and where the ball fits in. That he's actually ran a few of them, you know, that were actual screen calls, because, you know, the way the window looked and how the ball had to get delivered, he just took off and ran with it. So there's been a couple of them that have been called. We just haven't hit on them, and we haven't executed those well enough. And then some of the, like I said, we had legal downfield on one screen, you know, a couple weeks ago. And the halfback screen, middle screen game is something that we're still trying to continue to improve.
All right. That's Brian Callahan, Titans head coach, starting things off and addressing the media. Obviously a lot on the Jarvis Brownlee trade, and it seems like there's definitely more to that story, Joe.
He's rambling. I mean, that's all he does. It's rambling.
Well, the GM or the president of football operations, I agree, whatever, should be up there answering these questions.
Yeah, so he's just rambling along, and he knows. I mean, he knows that this is close to the end.
Yeah.
I mean, I can hear it in his voice. What he's talking about, you know, keeping things in-house, not doing that. It's a rough spot now, but, I mean, your record is your record. You are 3-17 as a head coach of a National Football League team, and that's pretty terrible. And I think the end is nigh.
The end is nigh.
Yep.
Said you.
All of us.
Said I. We will react to what he had to say and much more. It was a crazy day in Titanland. We'll do that all ahead. And also, Derek Mason joining us coming up next, head coach of the Blue Raiders. We'll talk to him on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game, here on this Wednesday. And every Wednesday at this time, we say hello to Coach Derek Mason of the Blue Raiders. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Man, it's Kennesaw week, man. We right back at it.
What'd you learn from last week? I know it was a tight game, and then it got away from you there at the end with Marshall. Obviously, you had weather delays and different things that you had to deal with, but I know you, and I know there is no such thing as an excuse. So what did you learn from your team?
Well, we let some things happen to us. I think, you know, man, Marshall's a good team, but what's happening to us is more self-inflicted than anything else. You know, you saw the big a penalty on fourth down, you know, man, trying to hurdle in a shield. And I think those things, it's hard enough to win ball games, but you can't beat yourself, okay? You playing two opponents is tough. That was the message to the team. Hey, let's plan on playing Kennesaw, playing our best game on the road, but we cannot beat Kennesaw and ourselves in the process. So let's play one opponent, and then let's put our efforts towards that, and that'll get us what we want.
When you look at a situation like having penalties or the discipline, little things that you can sit there and preach to your team, and I know you do it, I've heard you do it, that we can't do these things to beat ourselves, and yet they still happen. I know how frustrating that must be for you, but what is the answer? I know if you knew that, you'd probably fix it. But, like, because I face it as a manager and what I do here, you ask somebody to do something, they don't do it. And it's like, where is the message being lost?
Well, I think what happens is this, right? I think it can become like popcorn or loose change, right? Popcorn pops, you know, like kernels pop, they don't all pop at the same time. And so we have to be more succinct in terms of how we hear things, how we see things, and how we experience things. We don't need to keep experiencing the same things. You know, like if they've happened to one of us, they've happened to all of us. So let's make sure, man, that the cumulative knowledge, the cumulative sort of you know, responses and sort of cultivation of like the experiences starts to lead us where we're trying to go. And that's what it is. I mean, it's still you know, it was the preseason. Now what we have is conference play. No margin, no room for error. Everything is still in front of us. It doesn't feel that way, you know, sometimes when you look at the 1-3, but the reality of it is we haven't played a conference game yet, and it starts this week with Kennesaw.
Talking to MTSU head coach Derek Mason on the Chase and Big Joe Show. And, Coach, you might have a different perspective because you get to watch the film and grade it. But from my viewpoint, I'm the positive guy. I'm telling you, I like the push your D-line is given every single game. Those guys are playing their tails off. They keep it up. I mean, they're going to break through because they're in every game, and they're pushing guys back and making plays. Am I reading that right?
You're reading it right. Look, that group has been dependable and solid week in and week out. And you know, like the rushing numbers may say differently, but it's not on that group. That group is doing a good job of building a wall. It's the edges, it's the fits, you know, like at times from the second level. And look, back end, we have to defend deep ball better, man. We've got to play the run better off the edges, and people are going to keep scratching, you know, where it itches. That's where the leakage is coming. But also on the positive side too, I saw some receivers come alive. I think this week getting Gamarion Carter back with that receiver crew and being able to go full throttle for us when we go to Kennesaw is something that I'm excited to see. We scored 28 and easily could have scored 35 or 42 points last week like without the penalties.
Oh, absolutely. You know, funny, Coach, all the way back to Pee Wee football and junior high and high school and college and on, I remember coaches always yelling at us, keep your feet moving, keep your feet moving. Jaquel Middlebrook takes that to heart because that young man, his feet keep going. That opening run in the game versus Marshall the other night, other runs that he had, that guy's a warrior. And he plays hard and he runs hard and he looks for contact. To me, that's a huge plus for your football team.
It is a huge plus. That's what I'm saying. I think this group has gotten, you know, incrementally better when you talk about the offensive group, you know, each week. It started slow, but hopefully this thing just continues to heat up, right? And if it trends the way it's been trending, I truly believe that this group, if we can minimize the penalties, maximize the performance, and continue to get everybody involved, this group is going to make some noise, okay? But you got to get one first, and we've got one league game this week. That's Kennesaw State, so let's go.
Kennesaw took down Arkansas State, which is a pretty good football team. What from Kennesaw do you you must stop in order to win?
You know what? Their dual threat quarterback Odom is talented. I think he's a solid thrower. I think he's an extremely good runner. We've had to play running quarterbacks, and we found success in spurts. So the thing that we got to do is get this group behind the chains. They don't play behind the chains very much, so you got to get them behind the chains and get off the field on third down. So that's the tall task for the defense. Offensively, we got to put pressure on these guys. Okay, we've got to score early, often, and consistently.
Coach, we appreciate it. Good luck against Kennesaw. We'll obviously be pulling for it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Take care, Chase. Hey, Joe, let's get it.
Absolutely. Derek Mason joining us here on the program. It. Coach of the Blue Raiders. They take on Kennesaw State starting at coverage begins at 3:30 on Saturday on Total Hits 93.3. Kickoff at 5. And you can listen to it there. And then the off week, and then they do their Wednesday games.
All through October, man. The 8th, 22nd, and the 29th.
So kind of resetting, going back to Brian Callahan, it's been an interesting 24 to 36 hours for this team because he's given up play calling. I thought Jill asked a really good question of, I know you haven't even hit the field yet, but obviously the prep and stuff, meetings going on, like, have you noticed a difference? He said he's been in the defensive and special teams meetings. Again, I don't know what kind of difference that's truly going to make because the decisions, some of the decisions that we have criticized him on had nothing. Some had to do with play calling,
right?
But some did not. Some were game management and head coach stuff. That okay, if you really think you calling the plays has hindered that, then I think we got bigger problems. But and then the Jarvis Brownlee stuff continues to be very strange to me. There is obviously a reason. They don't want to tell us what that reason is, but you don't just trade a second-year player that was basically a starter for you,
right?
Because of whatever BS he put out there.
You trade a fifth rounder for a seventh rounder? Is that right? Is that what they're getting back? Sixth
they
rounder?
Traded a seventh and him, who was a fifth rounder, and got a sixth. Yes.
That's just really like, you need to get out of here.
That tells me, Floyd Reese used to always say there was a reason that a player was available. Bad talent or bad player, just wasn't good. Bad contract. Bad guy, hurt. So it's one of those things.
But the Jets took a flyer on him.
Yeah, so I guess.
I don't understand it. But he's gone, and now people got to step up. But I think there's more to come. I really do. And if they lose to the Texans on Sunday, more of that's going to be happening and to see. But this is on the worst-case scenarios that you've got going on. And I don't think – you know, him being in a special teams meeting in defense, like
whatever.
They ain't going to do anything, man.
PK tweeted 14 minutes ago, Brian Callahan at maximum ridiculousness says trade wasn't about the player specifically. How is trading Jarvis Brownlee not about Jarvis Brownlee?
But you made a good point. He shouldn't be the one answering that.
I agree.
Your GM should get up and say, here's what we did. If you want to be really transparent, there you go. But they're not going to be. That's a sign of a bad football team, bad organization, bad front office, bad all the way
well,
around.
And I wonder, too, if Brinker and Borgonzi are just like, look, let him go take it because we're going to fire him anyway. I mean, that's honestly how it feels.
Could be.
And, like, you can read his face, his body language, like, he knows.
So, if they go 0-4, I think he lasts this weekend. 0-5 at Arizona, and typically, the team has stayed out on the West Coast when they've had back-to-back West Coast games.
Do we know they are for sure doing that?
I don't
know,
but they've always done that.
Yeah.
They've always done that, back-to-back games like that. So if you're 0-4, you head west to Arizona now. Do you fire him when he's out there? Do you fire him when he comes here? But there's a lot of factors involved here because you go 0-4.
Well,
I mean,
Arizona. Do you bring the whole team back if you're going to – I mean –
it's a great question. I mean, they know. There's a timeline that they know over there. 0-4, it's a disaster. You bump McCoy up. Yep. There you go.
To me, if they know they're going to do it at some point during the season, if they go down to Houston and lose to Houston, that's when you do it.
I think so. Plus,
you do it before that.
Yeah,
that
and Hardegree's got a week of calling plays under his belt. I know the relationship him and Mike McCoy have, but you got that. Now you go on the road for 2 weeks. You're away from all the distraction here in Nashville. You're away from everything else. You can go out there and just concentrate on the game. But, yeah, but if they go down there and beat Houston pretty bad, then this whole thing just keeps going, man, and we don't know where it's going to end. So that's why this game's Sunday.
Do you truly believe that that's going to happen, though?
I don't know. This team – did you think last year they go down there and drop how many they did on them last year? Nobody did.
No.
Yeah, Houston's desperate at 0-3. They are absolutely – because they know what 0-4 means for them down there.
Here's the thing. Paul made a good point this morning on Robbie and Rex Road. Their next three opponents aren't good. They're not good teams.
Arizona's not bad.
Arizona's okay, and I think the Raiders are better than maybe their record shows. But they're all – if you're looking at things sensibly, could be winnable. Not with this team, though.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean,
they should go 0-3.
I mean, they should go 0-9.
Yeah.
Before the bye week.
Yeah.
That's how bad it is. Because I remember you come back, you got Vrabel, then you got Indianapolis who's playing lights out, and then the Chargers come to town. You have the bye week. So there's not a winnable game on that schedule. Not even close.
615-737-1025 is our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. A lot of you weighing in on this. We'll get your answers to that next. I don't know what the hell's next for the Titans. I don't think they do either. That's part of the problem.
Right.
It's Chase and Big Joe presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel on this Wednesday, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. I could let this play all day. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, The Game.
This has been voted the worst song of all time, and I
really?
Completely disagree with this. I like the song. It's about corporate greed, man, yeah. Taking it down.
Yep.
I like the song.
Jefferson Starship.
Yep. And Mickey Thomas and Grace Slick. I've always liked this song, but it's voted the worst song of all time. The worst song of all time. That's a title.
Hey, Titans fans built this city, and it's being torn to the ground. So,
did they, though?
Sort of.
Really. I would like to say that us long-suffering Vanderbilt fans that are finally getting to see some greatness had a lot to do with that. I heard one call in to Jake's show today, and I heard him say a phrase my dad used many times. I've been a Vanderbilt fan for 50 years, and just, you know, Dad would say to people when they would say that, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's true. We love them.
Who thought Vanderbilt would come to save us?
They have. I mean, anytime I see Clark Lee pop up on anything, I stop what I'm doing so I can listen to him.
We watched the documentary, the Netflix documentary on the SEC, but seeing Clark Lee in that light and what he's done, I mean, you just got a whole new respect for that guy.
Here's what I love about it the most. He's not just some guy they hired in to be the next head coach.
Right, yeah.
He's a guy that grew up in Nashville, went to NBA, went to games on West End, went to Vanderbilt. Like, he knows all that stuff. He knows that same old Vandy. And he's like, I'm going to be the guy to change all that. And
took a while.
It took a while. It took getting the right people, because that's what happens. You got to get a Diego Pavia. You got to get an Eli Stowers. You got to get a Tim Beck. You got to get a Jerry Kill. But it's just so awesome to see. And I hope it keeps going. Like, they got to take care of business Saturday. And then 2:30 next Saturday against Alabama.
Yeah, and the thing is, don't text in and say, well, you know, if you give Clark Lee time, you got to give Brian Callahan time.
It's totally different, though.
I'm telling you, it's 100% totally different. As my friend will say, hell, that's a damn 360. It's not. So, yeah, but good for them. We went on Saturday and then move forward and do that. All right, our question of the day is, and again, we love you guys. I mean,
let me take care of it. Can sure. I? Let me pay bills and then.
All right.
Question of the day is presented by Aries Tactical. Your safety, your skill, your Aries Tactical. Check them out at ariestactical.com. Joe, what is our question of the
day? There we go. We love Aries Tactical. We love Aries Tactical. It's one of the great places around. Up in Gallatin. We love Gallatin, right? We love Gallatin. Love Sumner County. Anyway, all right. So our question of the day is,
thank you,
by the way, our visit that day still makes me laugh, because we had the best time at Aries Tactical in Gallatin that day. We couldn't stop laughing at everything that we were doing in there. All right, here we go. Our question of the day, and you guys are great. I hear your responses on Robbie and Rexo in the morning. It's so funny. So, all right, 615-737-1025. What play, what's the first play of the game do you want to see from Bo Hardegree on Sunday? What's the first play of the game? In fact, what would you call? If you're sitting next to Bo Hardegree and he says, hey, what would you call on this play? What play would you call opening play on Sunday versus the Texans down in Houston? 615-737-1025.
Well, I mean, we already know what formation that I'm going to be running things out of.
What do you got?
Give it to me. The wing tee.
All right.
We're going to run the wing tee. I think we're going to have a tailback screen over to Calvin Ridley, and by God, he's going to catch it.
Okay, now that's different. All right, he's got to be in the backfield, because that wing tee goes quick back and forth. So you got to move, you got to misdirection one guy and toss another guy.
It's okay. Being A-back in that formation.
Yeah, that's why they don't have a lot of double guys in the backfield anymore. That's why those plays don't.
So it's quarterback, fullback, tailback?
And then there's usually a wing. The guy off the wing that comes in, yes.
Okay, so that could be Io Manor. So Io Manor could run motion. We could just do a simple jet sweep out of the wing, too.
Okay.
Let's do that.
All right.
I like that.
All right, jet sweep with Io Manor. Dr. Crane.
Oh, you know where to go. Forwards. Just send it deep. see what the young kid has for an arm.
Yes.
If Calvin Ridley's so legit wide receiver, throw it to him deep down the field.
I like it. I like a traditional set, two receivers, an H-back, and I like the hook and ladder. First play of the game.
Yes.
You get the X, run straight down the field. He carries the safety with him. Get the guy come underneath. He catches it, and the other guy leaks out. He tosses it, hook and ladder. That play almost always works. Hook and ladder, first play. Get it done. There you go. So we have the wing tee. We have the bombs away.
Four verts.
Yeah. And the hook and ladder.
You can also run quads out of that, too, on the left side. That'd be nice.
Ah, too bunched.
Restrepo's the last guy
behind.
Hey, and
if it doesn't work, one of your favorite impressions will say, get that son of a off the field.
So there we go. That's our – we want to hear from you guys. What would you first play of the game? I mean, they're going to do something – probably a little RPO to Pollard and he gets a yard
Look,
or two.
I think Eli has a realistic one that they could totally do that would just be awesome and catch them off guard and I think would be effective. A simple flea flicker. Run the flea flicker. Yeah. They could do it. Like First can point? You Cam and Pollard doing that? You could totally do it.
I could see that.
I think that that is perfect.
Did you see the double option that Dan Campbell ran the other night? It was beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, it was with Amon-Ra and,
yeah.
And,
yep.
Yeah.
I mean, it was amazing play call. I mean, that has stones. Dan Campbell has stones to call that in a game, and they executed it perfectly. But yeah, I like this. I like all of us have the thing of up tempo. Yours was up tempo, Chase. Dr. Crane's up tempo. Mine's up tempo. Go up tempo. And further on, get Cam out of the pocket. Let him scramble, do things with his feet. He's great when he scrambles on the bootleg, a naked bootleg. It doesn't matter. Get him out of the pocket. Let him make things happen. He is a 7-on-7 quarterback. When they scramble out and do things, that's where he is. Now, I hate 7-on-7. I think it's ruining football. But in this case, get him out of the pocket and let him make things happen, either with his feet or on the run.
All right, let me read through some of these. Josh says, I'd like to see 5 wide streaks down the field. There you go.
Get it.
2580. F it. Flea flicker.
All right.
Joey from Gallatin. Quick slant to Restrepo.
Oh, yes.
6061. Screen to Julius Chestnut. Michael.
All right.
Michael and Madison. A quarterback kneel down just to get the game over with.
Oh, God, the V formation. Oh, man. Do it.
Okay, I know this has come up before, and you're going to have to explain it to me again. 5561, obviously the annexation of Puerto Rico. That's from a movie, right?
Little Giants.
Little Giants, yeah.
Okay.
With John Madden and the nerds over there trying to map it out on some sort of paper. Yeah, it was hilarious.
Dylan says, I'm calling a play-action pass to hit DK on a post route 60 yards downfield.
All right. Good. Up-tempo. Keep them coming, baby.
I love play-action.
Love it.
A lot of flea flicker in there. Lenny says, post route, throw it to the tight end.
Okay.
And Lenny also said, maybe Clark Lee can give Brian Callahan a job. I wouldn't be shocked.
They're buddies.
They are buddies. I would not be shocked.
They were on the UCLA staff together in the early 2000s.
Yep. Justin and Greenbrier, 2 tight end set, Chig and Helm running crossing routes across the middle and 2 verts down the field.
I don't like that because Helm and Chig will hit each other. Crossing over, pass.
They got to get West and Clarksville. I think they need to get a run game going to call the play action. We could do the King Henry Wildcat. Oh, wait, we don't have Henry.
Well, he'd probably fumble anyway, too, since that's what he's doing these days.
Our line would, let's see. Flea flicker. Our line would give them plenty of time. I think they're sarcasm.
Right. They got to be quick.
Is this something to the Bombs Over Baghdad, the B.O.B.? I know it's a song.
I don't know.
Is that a play?
It's a reference to Just Throw It Deep.
Okay.
Gotcha. From my knowledge.
Gotcha. Benjamin says, punt it.
Might as well.
Al, first play of the game, I would call a timeout, take a delay of game penalty, and then try an 82-yard field goal. They're already good at that.
They are good at that. Brian Callahan's writing that down somewhere right now.
Hey, that's a great idea.
Love
Who
it.
Who are those guys?
Love it.
Ask them if they want to be part of our 8 coaches that put the plays in. Andrew Dover, play action to the left with Pollard, Ward bootleg to the right, and launch the ball downfield to Iowa Manor or Ridley.
See? Move the ball down.
They
move it.
I do agree that they should bootleg more.
Absolutely.
Like, he's capable of running the naked boot or whatever. And like
that
line
sucks.
Yeah.
Get him out.
Yeah. Brian, a well-executed flea flicker, which is impossible because the Titans can't do anything well-executed.
I'd like to see a bootleg out and then Cam just fire a pass at D'Amico Ryan's head just as hard as he can. And say, there's more of that to come, pal.
Run, run, pass, punt. Byron says, tush, push from our own tent.
Every play is a tush, push. Every single play. God, that would be the best.
Dylan says, Wildcat with Mason Kinsey, and he steps right at the line to do a Derrick Henry pass to Restrepo 5 yards downfield.
All day long. Is Kinsey still in the practice squad?
Yeah.
Okay.
Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, but if you had a competent offensive line, he's going to get – I mean, Cam Ward will get sacked until the Galveston.
So here's basically what you just said. 2899, three-step drop and have Cam throw it as hard as he can and hit Callahan right between the eyes.
Oops. My bad, coach. They ran the wrong – Calvin ran the wrong route.
West and Clarksville, I almost guarantee the first play will have a penalty. That should be a prop bet. Oh, they'll probably run something completely just amazing – 80 yards downfield for a touchdown that'll get called back for a hold.
I can see that happening. Yep.
Gover says, what about the blind flea flicker? Pollard up the middle, and then when he swarmed, no-look toss over his shoulder to Ward, who goes deep.
That would be amazing, but
I'm awesome. Not, yes. But there's no way they're good enough.
There's no way.
Statue of Liberty, have Ward launch the ball at Callie's nards to take him out of the game.
To get rid of him, yes. Now, what do you think they're going to run the first? I bet they just upped in little Pollard off tackle. The same old conservative garbage we've seen forever.
All right, I want to tell a quick story.
Yes.
So when I was in high school, one of the things I did during games is I was throwing the ball into the ref. So I would change the football out and make sure the ref got it. And I think we were at Fairview, and it was pouring down rain. It was terrible. And, you know, coach was like, don't let the balls hit the ground. Well, the problem was the ref was throwing way beyond me. And so I kept saying, coach, he's just throwing it. He's not trying to throw it to me. And, of course, coach is like, catch the damn ball, you know, get the ball. And so finally I'm like, okay, and I'm hustling, and I'm trying to keep the balls dry and everything. And the ref throws one, like I'm right here next to coach. He throws one so bad and off the mark, it hits coach right in the
jewels.
In the you know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and finally he's mad, but he looks at me and goes, I see what you're saying.
He like, get mad? I'd have gotten mad.
Oh, he got mad, but he's like, will you throw the ball to the ball boy?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so it was pretty funny. Dylan says, one more, we'll go to break. The Philly special would actually work. I actually think that the Philly special would work, yep, too.
Yeah, you got to do something different. It's very hard to defend that play because it's very hard to see it coming.
We'll continue to get to this throughout the show. Our question of the day is, you call the first play with Bo Hardigree. What are you calling? 615-737-1025, our phone and text line, driven by Wilson County Hyundai. .com. We will get to that throughout the show. Hey, DVD with Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and Willie Donick will be broadcasting live from 3 to 6 at Jimmy Kelly's this Friday as they celebrate the opening of their all-new rooftop dining area and bar. It's also a great place to go before and after Vanderbilt games. Check that out on Friday. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Wednesday.
Let me tell you something real quick, that a lot's been made about how the Titans weren't ready on Sunday and they came out and the Colts noticed that. But tell you a quick story. 2012, Alabama comes to Knoxville to play Tennessee. I'm on the field. Tennessee's whole team's out there. Alabama's not out yet. All of a sudden, Alabama's special teams come out and here comes Saban. I'm in the sideline. I'm with a friend. And the entire Tennessee team turns around and looks at Saban walking out. And they stopped what they were doing. And I turned to my friend and I said, I know Alabama's going to win, but Tennessee is so scared and intimidated, the game is already over. Alabama beat them pretty bad. The score was not, it was like 49-28 or something. It was a lot worse than that. But the fact of, you hear what the Titans talk about on Sunday, they weren't, the Colts guys, they weren't ready. That is a real thing. I saw it.
I think, yeah.
I saw it, and the Titans players can deny it all they want. That is a real thing. When the other team notices that, what's going on, and I just know, if I remember that day when Saban walked out and everybody in that stadium just shut up and stared at Alabama coming on the field. I'm like, I have never seen a game over before it began. And that's exactly what happened. And that says a lot about Callahan, the preparation, what's going on. Those guys don't want to play for him. I mean, it's bottom line. You're not motivated to play for them. You know what's going to happen. You know the coach is going to put you in a situation. You're going to lose. And it's happened. We saw it. You're 0-3, and there's really no hope of anything else going forward. It just I'm going back to what happened on Sunday with Michael Pittman and that interview with our friend Gover, and it's just like, oh, my gosh, this is a very, very real thing. It cannot happen again.
I mean, my thing is I'd be curious if a team, not just the Titans, ever had the stones to basically tell the media, hey, we've instructed our players that they can tell you, they can answer everything the way they want to answer it truthfully. I want you to go in there and ask them, like, hey, do you think things are going well right now? Like, is the coaching good? Like, just take the gloves off and ask the straight up, straightforward question and get a straightforward answer. That'll never happen. It'll never happen. But I would bet you, if you did that in this Titans locker room right now, that at least 25%, if not more, probably more, would say, yeah, I got a problem with his coaching. Or I have a problem with how we're doing this. Or I have a problem with how we're doing that.
I'd love to hear it. You know, my go-to when I was covering the team day in, day out, was Vanden Bosch, Keith Bullock, right? Those guys. And then to a lesser extent, although he just really pissed me off many times, was Lawan. And you'd get some honesty, and you'd like that.
He would be honest. He was just
– in a very goofy way, he'd get there. But
he'd make it about him.
I think my most bizarre interview with a Titans player has been after the Titans lost to New England 59-0, I went up to Michael Griffin on a Monday, and I said, what happened? It was me and Mark Howard were standing there. And Michael Griffin says, man, I'm having some trouble with my baby mama, and it bothered me on Sunday. And I thought he was kidding. And I said, oh, man, I'm sorry. I said, you want to talk about it? He's like, yeah, I mean, there's some problems there. She's dating somebody else, you know, and that's my kid. I mean, he just lays it out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whole. And I just like, hey, man, I remember patting him on the shoulder. I was like, I'm sorry, man. I mean, what are you going to tell the guy?
But.
Who's telling
that
you this?
Stuff happens?
Yep.
Like, there is truth to that.
100%. And Mark and I were like, Mark's like, I've never heard that before. I'm like, me neither. And that was the honesty. And so I always looked at Michael Griffin in a different light because he was very transparent with us and said, here's what happened. You're never going to get it. You think Jeffrey Simmons is going to call off the coaching staff today? I'd
no.
love it.
No.
I said, like, we need to do things. But I love it. It's not going to happen because you know why? They are protecting their paycheck, and I get it. I totally understand it.
Do you remember, I want to say you were in this scrum, because I think you were at Channel 4 at the time. I even think they won the game. Like, I think it was a game they won. But we all go up to Jarrell Casey, and Jarrell Casey, I think he got called for a penalty or something. And he turns around, and he's like, yeah, guys, I'm not talking today. And we all kind of laughed because we thought he was kidding because he, you know, would do that. And he turned around. And it's like, I think Terry or John, like, started out. And he's like, no, really, I'm not talking today. Y'all have a good one.
I remember, what was that for?
And I don't remember what it was. Because I was so shocked. I kind of stood there for a second. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, thanks, Jarrell. And he was like, sorry, man. Just not. It's just one of those days.
I remember he was livid.
He was really nice about it. Like, he wasn't a jerk. He wasn't like he was very just like, guys, sorry, I'm not talking today.
Do you remember when Lawan cost them the Raiders game in 16?
Yes.
He went down the field. They were driving and he blocked. The play was done.
Is that when Derek went on his rant and called him a backstreet boy?
My Derek who?
Derek, our Derek.
Oh,
on these airwaves.
Because
it got back to Lawan and pissed Lawan.
Might have been because Derek Carr was the quarterback of the Raiders. That's what you're talking about. Casey was mad then. I vividly remember that because Lawan blew the game for him because they were going down the score. He gets in sportsmanlike. It knocks him back 15 yards. And Jarrell Casey was mad about that. That might be it, if I remember correctly. Because he was up, a lot of them were upset that day in the locker room because they had the game won. It was 1,000 degrees. There was 90% Raiders fans there, and the Titans were driving to win the game, and it didn't happen. So sometimes there's guys in there will tell you how it is. All too often it's not, and maybe it's not in their nature, and I understand that. But when they do it, it's pretty good stuff.
We'll have more coming in hour number two. That first hour flew by. My goodness. Here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.